Hi everyone. I'm Darren Orr, and I'm having to broadcast today on Skype, the audio but not the video, because we're having some technical issues with my Comrex unit, which is normally giving me quality sound. There's always a little tinny quality to Skype. It's one of its limitations, but it's a good backup, so we're using it rather than the telephone today. We're going to talk about potato power. How those spuds serve up high-quality protein that's good for women's muscles. McMaster's University in Ontario published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. I'll get into that in a moment. So for those of you who said, where would I get my protein if I'm eating meat or cheese or fish? We have a lot of sources of protein, much better than the meat, the fish, the cheese. Also today, I'm going to challenge the people who run our COVID pandemic efforts. And I'm going to deconstruct the veneer of their credibility and legitimacy. It's important you understand that these people are not credible, they're not smart, they're clever, they're manipulative, they're Machiavellian. And their goal is vaccines. Now, if there was a time when I was pro-vaccine, in fact, most Americans have always been pro-vaccine. It's only once you've been damaged, lied to, manipulated, and then have the Justice Department lawyers when you go to vaccine court, because they're the ones who try to attack your credibility, delegitimate your injuries of you and your child to prevent compensation. So imagine a double negative. First, the government pays a pharmaceutical company to manufacture vaccine, then turns over the patent to them or co-patent, then buys the vaccine back from them, then indemnifies them from any injury compensation problems so they don't have to worry about ever paying a penny, no matter how deadly or dangerous the vaccines are. Then that same government agency mandates the CDC that we must take these. Then that mandate, which has the authority of science, and the official government blessings, then goes to the state legislatures, who are then inundated by lobbyists for the vaccine manufacturers saying, make sure that you get this as a mandated vaccine for every child and now adult in the state, like in California. So then you are forced to, or you believe you should, take a vaccine because the propaganda and the certainty of authority figures. You give the vaccine to your child, who's normal. Now the child is not normal. If it's a teenage girl, she can now be so destroyed by this that her neurological system is now collapsed. Her cardiovascular system is collapsing. As a result, she's in a vegetative state or dies. And we're talking about tens of thousands of injuries. We're talking about lots of deaths and not a single apology from anyone in that chain of command and profit hearing. No acknowledgement that this is a deadly disaster. And then you go to get compensated, or at least have your medical bills paid at some level, and the government tries to show that you're the problem. It works against you. You're not allowed to bring in expert witnesses. You're not allowed to have an appeal. Whatever the government lawyers say is absolute. And then we find out that the government lawyers brought in their expert, and he was the top pro-vaccine advocate of the government, and now he changes his mind. He begins to question his own certainty and finds out that he was wrong. So what do? When their number one expert now says, we can't say that vaccines are not contributing to autism spectrum disorder, they fire him. You don't know about that. We do. We investigate. So now you have a double negative. We're going to see the same identical thing occurring with COVID. Mark my words, you'll have non-tested, properly tested, and no proof vaccines. It will all be based upon mathematical models and suppositions and the emergency to get it in, just like the drug for HIV infection and AIDS was brought in, and it was deadly. And it killed hundreds of thousands of people. And yet the people who promote it and the people profit from it have yet to acknowledge that they participated in that toxic effort. So we're gonna review all this today on our show with the hope that those people in this audience will take it to heart. Also today, I've been inundated with calls from people working in the medical establishment saying that there's no place for them to call. No one in the media wants to hear their story, that how bad the medical treatments themselves are and how many people are dying not because of the COVID virus, but rather because of the treatment they're getting from nurses and doctors. So we are providing a form, providing first knowing that the person is legitimate and verifying their background, that they were where they said they were, and then let them tell their story in their own words. We have one of those people today. We've had to do a lot of editing on it. Apologize for that, because this person let it rip. I mean, it's like she just had a breakdown on in front of her camera. And because we're syndicated all over the world, we have to hold some sensitivity to those people who want to hear the message, but without the vulgarity. So you'll hear the message. Not a single part of that is edited. Just some of the expletives that we don't believe that we should be putting out. So we have a lot to share today. And we're going to start with this research, because we found in this newest research on the simple potato, people think of it as just a starchy vegetable, but it's also a high-quality protein because it also contains amino acids. We forget that almonds, walnuts, and pistachios, and sweet potatoes, and yams, and all other types of potatoes, they contain amino acids too. All eight essential amino acids. So you can obtain the protein you need from a high-quality plant-based diet instead of the animal-derived diet. And that's what they found. And, the protein in a potato is not necessarily abundance. It's certainly not what you get in a bowl of soybeans, black soybeans. Oh, you're up to almost 30 grams protein. It's very high. That's almost a half a day supply for most people, or more. I just had that last night in a salad. Sunflower sprouts, broccoli sprouts, a red onion, sweet onion. I made myself a tahini lime sauce and sprayed it onto the salad. It was really interesting. Just like to do a little creative cooking. You can do the same. So just keep in mind that for the average person, you need about, if you're an average, let's say, average built man, 60 grams a day, average built woman, about 70 grams a day. So this is one way of getting your protein. Again, is one part of one meal, potatoes. They're more than starch. Now, of course, if you cook them at a lower temperature, and you first rub coconut oil around them after you wash them, then that protects the outer layer from having its alpha lipoic acid, very important nutrient, which is in potatoes in pretty good amounts, destroyed. So always cook your potatoes by first massaging them in coconut oil and keeping the temperature down. 325 degrees takes a little longer, but first take a knife and make about a 1-inch incision down the top, the bottom, and both sides of the potato. It'll cook more evenly because it's dissipating the moisture and the heat as it cooks. Otherwise, people tend to cook a potato at too high a temperature, so the outside is overcooked and the inside is undercooked. I'm sure you've all experienced that. You cut into a potato, the outside, half inch, it's fine, and then it's like cutting into a brick. So this is where you get a much better potato. For all of you who are in our home-based program of our anti-aging study, I know that you're doing your exercise. We're going to have another meeting this Saturday at noon Eastern Standard Time, a conference call. You'll all be given the number. Everybody seems to be doing very well, and that's excellent. We're getting some major initial subjective improvements. The people's blood pressures are coming down, blood sugars are coming down at a rather rapid rate, and that's terrific. People are losing weight because they're exercising. This morning, we just did an hour and a half exercise, and one of the guys who were doing fast power walking, the guy says, it doesn't seem like an hour and a half. It was so easy. Yeah, you build up gradually. It's all about gradual, not all at once. But I'd like to see everyone listening right now go out for a power walk for about an hour in the morning and a half hour in the afternoon. Now, my suggestion is you stay 15 feet apart, not 6 feet apart. Let me explain what happens. Normal breathing is not the problem. Depending upon the, let's say, a 5 mile an hour wind, which is almost non-noticeable. 10 mile an hour wind, you feel it. Your hair blows up a little bit, you'll notice it. Well, that's taking whatever was in your breath and whisking away. But if you were to cough, or someone were to cough, let's say walking ahead of you, that cough goes out at anywhere from 9 to 12 feet, not 6 feet. Normal breathing, 6 feet is fine. But coughing, and even if you put your hand up to your mouth, which you shouldn't do, never put your hand up to your mouth if you're coughing or sneezing. Put your inside of your elbow up, because that traps far more of the sputum coming out. But then that cough is going to go in a matter of seconds. It'll pass the 6 foot mark and go 9 feet, and it dissipates down and starts to drop at about 12 feet. It lingers in there for maybe 40 seconds, then it drops out of the air completely. And when you're in an enclosed environment, it stays in the air much longer and covers all the surface areas. Outside, you don't have that problem. So as long as you're, let's say, 20 feet back from people or ahead of people, then you're not in their breathing space. On top of that, you can wear a mask, ideally an N95 mask. I always wear gloves, and I suggest everyone else wear the gloves outside. And you can continue to use the gloves. You don't have to use them once and throw them away. You can continue to wash them. You can spray your mask with 100% alcohol, which will kill all viruses and bacteria, or most bacteria, and also, or hydrogen peroxide. So either way, you're getting the benefit of sterilizing your mask, inside the mask and outside. Now, there's this question, should people who are sick wear masks? I don't believe that they should wear masks indoors, because what's happening is, if you have an infection, any form of infection, just say the flu, and you're wearing a mask, you're rebreathing everything that you're putting out. Now, when you're outside, you're around other people, yes, a mask is beneficial, and it's just smart. So just understand, the science shows that you can be outside and be healthy, get your sunlight, get your exercise, without harming yourself. And also, I will tell you this, we have been misstated. Now, I'm not saying it's intentional, because I have no proof. And then only in time will we tell or not find out if this was a way of manufacturing consent over the people based upon misusing our approach to a real pandemic, a real problem. And the healthy people should be able to go to work. The healthy people should be able to not be limited as far as being outside. Just be smart. And the sick people, we should have special facilities for them, critical care facilities. The idea of taking someone who had the coronavirus, was treated in a hospital, and then been brought back into a nursing home, that is the most irresponsible, scientifically and public health maladjustment I've ever imagined. We should only have people with coronavirus that are diagnosed and being treated in completely isolated environments, and we have to change the protocols. The protocols are wrong. They're killing people. We're killing people because we're not willing to look at a protocol. Is it working? We're just applying it. Why don't we have hyperbaric oxygen chambers in every hospital? Dozens. Why don't we have those in nursing facilities, medical facilities for the staff? Why don't we have the nutritionists, the dietitians for hospitals, working up immune modification protocols for the food and supplements, which we do not do now at all, any place. We're giving people the kind of hospital food that actually contributes to disease instead of the food and juices and supplements like vitamin D and vitamin C and selenium that would help them, especially with their heart, coenzyme Q10, magnesium, cayenne, and their lungs, vitamin E. But we're not doing that. And we should. I'm not even getting to the vitamin C drip part of it. But we've got to have a different approach to this. Because what we've done is we've been mismanaged by people with good intent. I'm going to give them the benefit of a doubt now, whether they deserve it or not, who destroyed the world's economy, destroyed people's lives, put people into deep depressions. Some people have committed suicide. And then we lied about the figures. There was an Italian parliamentarian who got up and just raised hell. He was yelling and screaming at the top of his lungs. They were telling him to quiet down and settle down. He wouldn't do it. It was 4 minutes long. I watched this morning. I would play it for you, but it's in Italian. And though it's scripted at the bottom, so you see what he's saying. And he's saying that the top scientist in our country, the head of our public health, said that 97% of the people who died of COVID actually had other life-ending diseases. And that should have been noted. That would have given us a more realistic outlook. 100% of the people in some nursing homes have died. And we should be separating out those figures. We should be keeping people in proper new protocols in critical care and not just going through the same process with every single one that's leading to a very high death rate. So, but the actual death rate, just from the COVID virus, no one has any statistic on that. What we do know is probably 90% of all the deaths attributed to the COVID virus were not from the COVID virus, but from other comorbidities. Well, then suddenly, this has not killed as many people as just an average, normal, annual flu. That's the part that they're terrified of. Think of the careers that will be destroyed. Think of the scientists' reputations that will be tainted. Think of the media that will look like, well, they look like idiots no matter what, because they didn't handle this right. They didn't look for the facts. They didn't look at the independent science. They listened to people, these clowns like Anthony Fauci, or people like Bill Gates, a danger to society. Just wanted to share that. So get back to the University of Alberta here. What the University of Alberta found was that, listen carefully, 5 minutes of sweat sessions can keep you active and healthy while working from home. And this is according to the University of Alberta. Not for this audience. I'm sure most of you know how to keep yourself active, to do exercises, sit-ups, pull-ups, push-ups, whatever you can do inside your house. Have inexpensive, lightweight dumbbells and do curls with them and arm lifts. Get outside, power walk. All that can be done safely. But from the average person, staying active while working from home, but getting in just 5 minutes of moderate exercise every few hours, every 2 hours, stop, stand up, and do exercises. That's an effective way to maintain your physical and mental health. Quote, prolonged sitting has been shown to be linked with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, and some cancers. And that was from the University of Alberta's Faculty of Rehabilitation Medicine. So every 2 hours, exercise at home. From the Chinese Academy of Sciences, much like our American or the National Academy of Sciences, wolfberry. Yeah, wolfberry. It inhibits the amyloid beta 1-2-42 aggregation and rescue memory loss in this model. So it's easy to buy wolfberries. A little orangish, dried up. When they're not dried, they're very slippery. No matter how many times you wash them, they feel like they need to be washed again. Now, that's just the texture of their skin. They're great fresh, but they only come once a year. But dried, you can get them anytime and just put a handful into a smoothie. So if you are concerned about Alzheimer's, dementia, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, have a handful of wolfberry, dried wolfberries, every day, because it is very good at limiting the amyloid buildup. That's what we want. And finally, from Jiangsu University in China and the University of Massachusetts, an article about the benefits of what is called chicoric acid. It's a powerful antioxidant, and it's now a functional food. Well, this chicoric acid has been used for a long time. It's found in roots of many plants, especially those that grow in the Mediterranean region. But let's make it real simple. I won't go through all the things that we wouldn't have in the United States or Canada, including flowering herbs, but chicory, C-H-I-C-O-R-Y, that's where it comes from, and purple coneflower, that's echinacea. That's where it comes from, and basil, B-A-S-I-L, simple culinary herb, that's where you get this. So by having basil, chicory, echinacea in your foods, you're benefiting from that. It's a powerful antioxidant that turns down all of the free radicals in your body. Oh, and by the way, from Harvard School of Public Health, cutting junk food consumption helps prevent irreversible damage to male fertility. Get rid of the junk foods and have better biochemistry. And get away from the artificial sweeteners, because they worsen the symptoms of Crohn's disease, according to Case Western Reserve University. Published in Inflammatory Bowel Disease, it revealed that Splenda, a type of zero-calorie artificial sweetener, exacerbated gut inflammation in this laboratory study. All right? If you want a natural sweetener, use stevia. That helps. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 22 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break now. When we come back from the break, and I'm not sure if you can watch us, Jesse will let me know if you can watch by going to prn.fm, and because sometimes what we can't put up anywhere else, we can put up there so you can watch it. No, it's audio only. Well, what you're missing is you're missing a nurse in her protective gear, and she's very emotional, but she'll explain why she's emotional. Now, mind you, there are many nurses and doctors coming forward to tell their story because they can't take it anymore. And by the way, on our archives, if you can't listen to a full program or want to re-listen again, call the archive number. Write it down, please. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And from what I'm told, a lot of people have been calling in with our voicemail. And I'll get to those in another 2 days. Tomorrow, it's been finished for 2 weeks, and I haven't done it yet because it's a long piece. But we're going after Bill Clinton. We're going after two people who are guiding Bill Gates, and one other guiding the whole war on the coronavirus. And they've been putting out their vaccine programs all over the world with some devastating effects. It's time they were called out. So you can call in our voicemail, leave a question, leave a statement, 862-800-6805, 862-800-6805. Now to a break, and we're coming back to, well, you'll probably hear a nurse crying.
Ron. Oh, great goodness. It is 8:42 New York time. And I got to my regular unit, and they took my patient away, my black eye. And now I'm getting switched units. This is exactly what happened before at the other hospital. As soon as I told somebody, like management, and tried to advocate for my patient, they take the patient away from me, and then they move me. So, like, I legitimately don't even know what to do anymore. Like, even the advocacy groups don't give a shit about these people. Like, literally, like, Black Lives don't matter here. And I mean, that's pretty sad that somebody who is white and lives hundreds of miles away from the city gives more of it about these people than the actual people in this city. Like, for real. Like, I had a complete breakdown yesterday because, you know, I missed an important email to do a revision on my proposal, so my proposal got canceled because I was trying to advocate for my patient and talk to management here and get the care that he needs because he's being medically mismanaged. And I just had a complete breakdown because, you know what, my entire proposal got canceled because I, you know, wasted my time advocating for a patient who's just going to die anyway. You know, and sure enough, they take the patient away from me, and then almost 2 hours into the shift, they switch me units. This is exactly what happened at the other hospital when I was advocating for the little Hispanic lady. You know, guys, here's the thing. Let me try and put it for you, okay? I know not everybody's gonna live. I'm not that green or ignorant or, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed to think that, okay? I know we're gonna have a ton of people die. But these people aren't dying from COVID. Let me give you several examples here. An anesthesiologist in the resident started doing chest compressions on him, which is not what you do. You just externally pace them or you know, give him some atropine. And then, you know, I run in there to stop him from doing chest compressions on somebody with a pulse. And then he decides to push epi. He throws some pads on him to defibrillate the guy in bradycardia. Okay, he has a heart rate of 40 in a stable, you know, bradycardic rhythm. We just need to give him some atropine and pace him. He defibrillates him and kills him. And I was literally ran out of the patient's room to get the director of nursing who was standing out there. And I'm like, can you stop him? He's going to kill that patient. He's going to kill that patient if he defibrillates him with bradycardia and a heart rate of 40. And the director of nursing just shook his head. And I turned around and he killed the dude. Okay. There was a nurse who placed an NG tube into some guy's lungs and filled his lungs with tube feeding. There was a nurse who confused a long-acting insulin with a short-acting insulin and gave 30 units of a fast-acting insulin and killed the guy. What else? Other stuff have I seen? Yeah. It's just here they're just gonna let them rot on the vent. They're medically mismanaging these patients. And I'm not a doctor, guys. I'm not professing to be a doctor by any means. But there's, like I said, basic standards of care that we have to do. Like, when somebody's low on blood, literally on the brink of a critical low blood level, we should replace the blood. But I asked the residents, and they're like, does he have internal bleeding? And I said, no. Then they're like, well, we're not replacing the blood. Well, here's the thing. And these COVID patients, they all eventually need a blood transfusion. Their blood, if you don't have enough blood to actually oxygenate your body, the vent settings don't, okay? They don't matter because you have no oxygen carrying capacity of your blood, okay? I told you about the patient where all that purulent drainage just kept seeping into his lungs because the ET tube cuff was leaking and nobody had a manometer here to check the pressures. And I finally figured that out. And I kept saying, hey, you know what? His white blood cell count is steadily, we're having a problem with it. Do you want to start some antibiotics? No. Well, does he have a fever? And I said, no, he doesn't have a fever. They didn't want to start antibiotics. Day shift nurse finally got a chest x-ray. He has full-blown pneumonia now. I've been telling them this for a while, but because he didn't have a fever, they didn't want to give him antibiotics. We have a nurse who, fell asleep at the nurse's station while we were all in rooms, and her norepinephrine ran out, and the guy had blood pressure and didn't perfuse his brain, and I'm pretty sure he's brain dead. That same nurse is now running a CRRT machine, a dialysis-like machine, that she has never done before. She said she'll figure it out, okay? I'm pretty smart and I figure a lot it out, but I would never attempt to try and figure out a CRRT machine on the fly. Like, we are adequately staffed. There's a ton of staff in there, like, and we have a nurse who does CRRT in there. She has a different patient load. We told them, like, hey, let's just swap these nurses so the one that knows how to work this machine can work this machine, but they didn't want to do that. So I'm pretty sure that patient will be dead here in a couple hours. And this is why I freaked the fuck out yesterday, because nobody is listening. They don't care what is happening to these people. They don't. I'm literally coming here every day and watching them kill them. I mean, we're not going to save everybody. That's fine. Like, come on, guys. We're not God. But, like, some of these people, hey, we know that they're not going to live. Let's start a hospice unit or something, you know? Like, they don't need to be in the ICU. Let's change course. Let's do palliative care or something. Like, literally, some of these people are just on sedation to keep them on the vents. Nothing else. I have a lady on a trank on a vent, and she's not cognizant. She's not even on sedation. You know what we give her every day? I give her breathing treatments, albuterol, and she gets insulin. And that's it. That's it. We're not treating the COVID, guys. Like, for real, we're not treating the COVID. You know, every day we try and get these guys off the vents, right? Because, you know, there's criteria for weaning. Every day, the day shift nurse will wean them down, like, to, like, minimum sedation. Every night, we come in and we get the same two residents and max out all the sedation again and undo all the work from the day shift. Then the day shift attending will come in and they'll all do rounds. And they'll be like, he wasn't synchronizing with the vent. So we had to turn all the sedation on. And I'm like, he wasn't synchronizing with the vent because it's in the wrong vent mode. So I legit don't even know what to do anymore. Like, I tried calling advocacy groups. I tried talking with management here, like the nursing admin. Like, nothing. Nobody's doing anything. We still have 100% mortality rate in the ICU unit. I just left. But, I mean, they're living longer because we have, like, legit ICU nurses there. So, CDC finally, like, not the CDC, FDA approved yesterday the remdesivir study, like, to start using remdesivir for COVID patients. Guys, I don't even know what to do anymore. And this is why I had a complete down, like, I literally had to call my friend Lisa and FaceTime her, and she answered the phone while she was in the shower because she, like, knew I was having a hard time to talk to her because it's like going in the Twilight Zone. Like, everyone here is okay with this. Look, the only way I can kind of put this into context for everybody is, and this is going to be kind of an extreme example, this is, like, really the only thing I can come up with. It's like if we were in Nazi Germany and they were, like, taking the Jews to go put them in a gas chamber, I'm the one, like, there saying, hey, this is not good, this is bad, this is wrong, we should not be doing this. And then everyone tells me, hang in there, you're doing a great job, you can't save everybody, you're amazing, you're a great nurse. Guys, I know I'm a good nurse, I know I go in there and I give it 500% every day, I know I'm not being negligent. Okay, what I need is someone to help me save these people from being killed. Okay, from gross negligence and complete medical mismanagement. And no one is listening to me. Like, for real, nobody's listening. I even tried getting a hold, like, of Black advocacy groups here. They just put me on hold or hang up on me. Tried talking to management. Now I got moved units. Like, I legit don't know what to do anymore. Can someone come up with, like, some type of a solution for me? Because I'm kind of out of ideas. You know, when I try and talk with some of the other nurses here, and they're like, well, you can't save everybody. And they all know what's happening. They all agree with me. And they all just shake their heads. And I'm like, am I the only one who is not a sociopath to think that this is okay? I mean, guys, they literally don't even know when they're dead. Like, how many times have I told you they've assigned me a dead person? Like, how long have they been dead? Nobody knows. Like, how is anybody assessing anything without a stethoscope? Normally we have, like, those disposable stethoscopes. But I knew what we were coming into, so I brought my old junky one. Nobody has listened to anybody's lungs as long as I've been here. Even with disposable stethoscopes. I keep telling them that, you know, the guys are, like, my patient's going acidotic. We need to do something about this before his kidneys shut down. You know, give him some bicarb or something like that. And this is what they do. They let the patient's blood get acidotic. Their kidneys shut down. And then at the last minute, some dude got shot in front of the hospital. Like, 2 to the chest and 2 to the abdomen. Yeah. So, anyways, kidneys shut down. And at the minute, they finally decide to run bicarb. So they run 5 liters of bicarb into a person who's gained 20 pounds of water weight and completely throw him into heart failure, and he dies several hours later. That was one of my patients. So I let them know, like, they had me start the bicarb, like, before I left one night, and by the time I had come back in, the next shift he was dead. And they assigned him to me, and he was already in a body bag. Like, guys, they're not dying of COVID, okay? Like, yeah, people are gonna die of COVID. Like, yeah, some people legit will end up with multi-organ failures and will legit throw the clots and kill them, like, and die. People know this. I'm not, like, skiing new grad, okay? That's gonna save everybody in the world, okay? I am literally telling you that they're murdering these people. And nobody will listen to me. I mean, like I said, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure that when you defibrillate somebody with a heartbeat of 40 in a stable...
I was hearing this from nurses and physicians, many of the physicians that worked at the Tri-State Healing Center, physicians that worked at the Institute of Applied Biology, ultra-Orthodox people, by the way, would tell me similar horror stories. If only you knew, Gary, if only you knew what went on in operating rooms, you only knew what happens when patients are given the wrong medication and everybody covers for them. And so I work on that for 5 years. Five individuals, all MDs or PhDs, all with research and scholarship backgrounds, looked at what was wrong with medicine. And we found that more people were dying because of medical error than any other cause of death. We submitted that to 9,000 scientific publications and over 500 media publications. It was called Death by Medicine. Hundreds of footnotes, fully documented, using only the American College of Cardiology, all these other professional organizations, only data. We didn't use any outside data. And the AMA said they were the third leading cause of death, iatrogenesis, but they did not include infections like bed sores that end up being ulcered and then a person ends up dying of gangrene. They did not end up counting infections people die from, caused from being inside, nor malnutrition. When you add those all together, it's the number one cause of death. You think that someone would pay attention. Put this in perspective. Just do the simple math. Let's just go very conservative and say in 1 year, and this is way below the actual numbers, way, way below. Let's just say you got 600,000 people dying and you got 365 days in a year. How many people are dying each day? 1,643 per day, every 24 hours. So if you have that many people dying, and that doesn't get anyone's attention, shouldn't that be of concern to us? Of course it should be concern to us. But it's not. So I'm very concerned. Excuse me, I just realized my math was off there by 1-0. But certainly we should all be concerned. So now we've got this and we are seeing more mistakes than ever. I want to share this with you. This is from Charles Ortlieb. And it's, quote, did Anthony Fauci help finance research that resulted accidentally in transmission of a bat coronavirus to pigs and then humans, question mark. And this is from a Newsweek article
And yeah, Fauci's behind the funding of this. Well, what exactly is the purpose of funding a Chinese laboratory known to engage in biological activity? That would be like funding Fort Detrick. There are international treaties that we've been in violation of. We're not supposed to be manufacturing anyone else or testing or developing any weapons that could be used, biological weapons. And yet we're doing it. They're doing it. Everyone's doing it. And now we're funding it. And this ended up in pigs. And they have a massive problem over there. I want to also read something. I'm going to read it verbatim, because this tells you who's behind all this. This is from F. William Indall. And by the way, he's an outstanding scholar, historian, and he revealed that Dr. Fauci, who had worked at the CDC for 36 years, actually with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, endorsed the discredited HIV/AIDS virus. I'm quoting him verbatim, and because he promoted the idea of of the test and the diagnostic test for AIDS, the ELISA test and the Western blot test and the PCR genetic test were not valid for what they claim because they were nonspecific. Meaning, if you had the flu or you had herpes and you tested one of these tests, you could test positive. Even though you didn't have the HIV virus, it gave false positive readings. And there was a Christine Johnson, outstanding researcher, who found over 78, I think it's higher now, 78 different conditions like tuberculosis, malaria, pregnancy, that you could get a false positive reading. So, but Fauci and Gallo were all behind this. Here's what he has to say. I'll read as much of this as I can. And again, this is by F. William Indall, and it's about the grandest criminal fraud in medical history, talking about this. I'm quoting him. Dramatic political and social decisions are being made across the United States and around the world on what emergency quarantine measures and other steps must be taken. In many cases, the radical and severe measures, such as shutting down the world economy, are being justified by COVID-19 case projections of morbidity and mortality into the future. If there is one person who is the face of the current strategy of dealing with the coronavirus in Washington, it is the director at the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease of the National Institute of Health, Dr. Tony Fauci. What major media conveniently leave out of discussing Dr. Fauci's role is his highly controversial and conflicting history since he joined the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease in 1984 during the beginnings of the AIDS panic. His role then sheds valuable light on his remarkable and highly controversial actions today. Dr. Fauci, a leading member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, is being promoted by major U.S. media such as CNN, MSNBC, or the New York Times as the great expert on all related issues to the COVID-19 outbreak. He had dismissed the president's efforts to promote a known malaria medication as treatment for severe corona patients as anecdotal, even though 7 years before he backed the same drug. He has publicly taken projections from an institute created in Washington State by the Gates Foundation, the same foundation that virtually owns the World Health Organization and owns major stakes in the leading vaccine makers, to claim that up to 200,000 Americans would die from COVID-19. Fauci stated that COVID-19, quote, is probably about 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu, end quote, which would mean 300,000 to 600,000 coronavirus deaths this year. At the same time, in a respected medical journal, he compared COVID-19 as similar to seasonal flu death. When questioned how long the shutdown of much of the U.S. economy must last, Fauci replied only when there is zero new COVID-19 positive test cases. Something impossible given the defective testing. He has also backed direct human tests of novel vaccines with no prior animal tests, including with radical non-tested RNA gene-edited vaccines. Fauci has more influence over U.S. national policy on the unprecedented COVID-19 pandemic than anyone, including the president. Much of the media treats him as with awe. As an unimpeachable scientist, one of the finest scientists in the world, a closer look at Anthony Fauci's career gives a starkly different picture, a very alarming one, in fact. Quote, America's AIDS czar. Tony Fauci has held the top post at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease in Washington for an astonishing 36 years. Today, he is well past retirement age at 79 and holds the funds to determine which drug companies or university researchers will get precious government funds for part of a $5 billion annual budget. Let's go back to 1984 when Fauci was named head of NIAID during the Reagan era. That year, the AIDS researcher Robert Gallo, working under Fauci, held a press conference to announce that he had, quote, discovered, end quote, the AIDS virus. He said it was HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. The shocking announcement, which went around the world, was in complete disregard of scientific procedures, a peer review, published scientific evidence, including the required electron microscope analysis. It was a case of science by press conference. As a critical scientist, professor, and then I will skip this because it's too long, I'll simply say those who challenged him. And by the way, I'm waiting on validation and independent verification. All I can say is, if some scientist can provide my office in New York with proof, then everything that Robert Gallo and Anthony Fauci claim will be shown to have been incorrect. But that story has never been told. I've interviewed the person myself. Now I'm looking for the evidence. I want to see the evidence, the dates of that which preceded this press conference and the discussions that were held. I think you'll find it interesting. Only will I share it with you if I can verify, validate it. In any case, this is just one of the things about the test. The issue of HIV/AIDS tests is central. While a frightened world was clamoring for a test, Gallo and Fauci promoted their deeply flawed tests of antibodies. In 2006, Gallo claimed, quote, HIV tests were highly accurate from the time they were developed in 1984 and have become much more accurate over time, end quote. That's Gallo stating that. Highly accurate 1984, but more accurate than highly over time? What's that mean? Gallo added in response to criticisms, quote, a PCR test for the presence of the virus itself can accurately determine a child's HIV status, end quote. By the way, I can personally tell you that's not true because the man who won the Nobel Prize in science for discovering the PCR, I knew. I filmed him several times, and he said that Gallo is wrong. You know, they're misstating what the PCR can do. Quote, in a sharp rebuttal, the Gallo claims endorsed by Fauci and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, as well as the CDC, Roberto Giraldo, who I also knew, by the way, MD, and Edine de Harvin, MD, and scientist, who produced the first electron microscopic photo of a retrovirus, pointed out that both the ELISA and Western blot and a genetic test, the PCR, are, quote, or viral load test, quote, the two major tests used to determine if one has AIDS are invalid. Quote, none of these tests detect the HIV virus itself, nor do they detect HIV particles, end quote. They add that there are, quote, more than 70 different documented conditions that can cause the antibody test to react positive without an HIV infection, end quote. Among the false positive cases are influenza, the common cold, leprosy, or the existence of pregnancy. The same tests are used today to determine SARS-CoV-2 positive. They concluded, quote, the fact that after 25 years of intense research, they're still using the wrong tests. Now, if Fauci was wrong back then about how HIV virus, there's no question the HIV virus existed. There's no question that it was a major cause of AIDS. the question that many of us had was, were you treating the condition properly? I felt not. I just located a cache of films. Got it. These are so important. I didn't know these existed. I had forgotten about these. And I'm going to play these right here on the air. If they arrive in New York today, I'm going to start playing them tomorrow. I did a series of interviews with individuals, medical doctors, and scientists. And I was asking about how do you deal with the HIV virus and AIDS cases. And each one was having phenomenal success. I went out to Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley. I filmed there. I forgot all about that interview. I did thousands of interviews. Down in L.A., the Linus Pauling Institute, Dr. Jawala, he was destroying the HIV virus with vitamin C and the HIV virus with quercetin. Then he combined the two together and wiped them all out, 100%. So I'm showing you that this was 1992. We were proving that you could destroy the HIV virus and reverse AIDS in patients who had advanced AIDS with natural non-toxic modalities. All of this was completely blacked out by the news media. We were helping people overcoming chronic fatigue syndrome, human herpes 6, all these conditions, HIV infected patients. So what this shows us is that Fauci was saying and Galli was saying, if you take our antibody test and you are shown to be positive, then you are positive. We'll give you a validation by a second test, but these are gold standards, meaning there's nothing else in the world that'll give you a positive reaction. They're 100% accurate. They were not 100% accurate. They were 100% wrong, because if you were pregnant, if you had leprosy, if you had malaria, if you had tuberculosis, if you had herpes, if you had chronic fatigue syndrome, you could test positive. So how many people went to their deaths using AZT, the treatment for AIDS, and didn't have AIDS? They had other conditions. How many people were treated who had chronic fatigue syndrome that we didn't even recognize then, but it had many of the same characteristics and many of the same biomarkers as AIDS patients? So they put them on protocols. Put them on, just like ventilators today. Put them on a ventilator. Put them on a protocol. You heard what the nurse said. 100% death in their ICU wards. Well, think of the number of people around the world who had the test that Anthony Fauci supported, and they didn't have the actual virus. They had other viruses, and they died because of the treatment. What's the very first thing you read when you open up the AIDS test to take it? This should not be used to confirm that you are HIV positive. What is one of the side effects of AZT? AIDS. So the drug used to will cause AIDS. So how do you know whether you have AIDS or you have the side effects of the medication? Why is this important? Because the same man who did that, and I hold responsible for the deaths of uncountless people with AIDS and HIV who could have been treated for the HIV virus and AIDS using natural non-toxic treatments, only using the other orthodox medicines as needed, is now going to be treating people with the COVID virus with vaccines. Vaccines, they're not proven safe or effective. That's why this is important. All you have to do is look in a person's background. Dig far enough back, and you'll find it. We have reproduced F. William Indall's article that I just quoted from on PRN.fm. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.